Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Matthew Wells, United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's programme, girls forced into armed conflict often end up as sex slaves, one Somali grassroots activist tells us. And the underreporting of sexual abuse in India is a pandemic, while victims are blamed and shamed, says one UN youth leader. But first, more than 200 million girls and women around the world are victims of female genital mutilation, or FGM, a practice that the UN says is spreading. For the International Day of Zero Tolerance for FGM on Monday the 6th of February, new guidelines were published by the World Health Organization to help health professionals tackle the problem. But it's not uncommon for health workers themselves to carry out the procedure, as WHO's Director for Reproductive Health and Rights, Ian Askew, told Daniel Johnson.
As you can understand, it's a difficult situation because for many of these healthcare providers, they're under a lot of pressure from their communities, from their families, and sometimes from their own professionals to carry out these procedures. So there's a number of efforts that can be done to try to address this. We can try to work with them to better educate them around the problems of carrying out the procedure, whether it's medical or not. And the fact that it is a violation of basic human rights to do this, regardless of the health impacts. But at the same time, we do realize that they're working in a particular context. And so it's important to also work with the health system in that country, with cultural and social leaders, to build a supportive environment for them to be able to resist requests for undertaking this procedure.
But have you seen any success in your approach so far?
No, at the moment, just not that we haven't seen any success, but there's very little evidence about whether it's, you know, the feasibility of doing this and how it works out. Very few countries have actively tried these approaches yet, and those that have tried it, the approaches haven't been well documented yet. So it's very important that we do need to do a lot more research to understand how this, you know, these ideas, these principles would work in practice.
Is it a case that a lot of people don't actually understand? As in my case, for example, I thought I knew what female genital mutilation was until I saw your fact sheet, and actually there are four different types and they're all horrendous.
Absolutely. I think there's always a need for continual education around this for the general public and for the families themselves, parents and those in the family that require and request that their girls go through this procedure. But we do have to go beyond just that because it does reflect in most situations a broader culture of gender inequalities, regardless of how horrific the, you know, the effects are going to be. So it has to be addressed both from the health and medical aspects and the damage done to the girls physically and mentally, as well as the broader role that the procedure plays. And in most cases, it's undertaken for social reasons, and the gendered position of girls in society needs to be addressed. Otherwise, you're always going to be pushing against an attitude, a norm in a society that supports this approach.
There's no band-aid solution to rehabilitating and reintegrating former child soldiers, a Somali activist has warned UN member states. Ilwad Elman, Director of Programmes and Development at the Elman Peace and Human Rights Centre in Somalia, made the remarks ahead of an event to commemorate 20 years of work to protect children. The UN General Assembly created a mandate in 1996 to end persistent and grave violations against children in war zones. Ms. Elman spoke to Jocelyn Sambira about how girls have been forced into marriages by armed groups, becoming, in effect, sex slaves.
I always had a calling and a passion for wanting to come back to Somalia and pick up the torch of activism and to continue the work that my father accepted. And that has led me down to a journey of returning to Somalia in 2010 and leading the organization that he founded and working in the field of rehabilitation, reintegration of children that are associated with armed groups in a much more difficult time, where we are not just looking at young people being forcibly conscripted into clan-based militias, but also those that are being recruited and used by the Somali National Armed Forces, and also the most exploitative and aggressive group, which is Al-Shabaab.
How many kids do you think your organization has been able to save?
It's difficult to put a figure on it since this work was started in 1990. But in the last 6 years that I've been involved with the organization, based in Somalia, we have an alumni program now of 3,500 young people that have gone through our rehabilitation reintegration programs.
Are there girls who are forcefully recruited as soldiers and you have to deal with them differently than the boys?
Yes. I mean, for the children that we support through our programs, there are also girls serving in different capacities as informants, as porters, as sex slaves, forced marriage situations. And the way that we engage with girls is very different from boys. Because oftentimes what happens when girls are forced into these temporary marriages that basically are just sanctioned sexual slavery is when she gets pregnant, she is abandoned. And then once she delivers Sometimes she still has contact with the father, or they keep tabs on the girl. So even when she completely disassociates from the group and is relocated to an area that's not under the control, there's still a connection, and it contributes to a lifetime of suffering. It comes with a lot more stigma, and it's unfortunate, but it's been easier to reintegrate boys because they don't carry any physical remembrance of it unless they were injured. But you can't tell who used to be part of the armed group if they become completely socialized. But with a girl that's been ostracized from her community, that has a young child, it's a lot more difficult, and the services that are in place are not adequate for a long-term social reintegration.
Have you become a target for the groups that recruit children?
By being unbiased, I'd like to think that we are not a specific target. But by being very vocal, it does come with pressure. It does come with risk and threats.
Have you ever been personally threatened?
I have.
And how do you deal with something like that?
I don't let it discourage me. I believe that the hardships that the people I try to serve face, I share them with them because I live in Somalia. I have the option to leave, but the people that I aim to support do not.
Confronting pandemic, underreporting of sexual crimes and victim-blaming practices are key challenges in the fight against gender inequality in India. That's according to Tricia Shetty, founder of She Says, an online platform designed to rehabilitate and empower women to combat sexual abuse. Ms. Shetty's also a UN youth leader for the Sustainable Development Goals. She attended the recent 2017 ECOSOC Youth Forum and told Lucy Dean that young people had a personal stake in fighting back against sexual violence.
We see this victim blaming happening all the time. In fact, recently there was a mass molestation episode that happened in Bangalore on New Year's Eve. And we had the Home Minister come out and say, well, this is what happens when the young people are influenced by Western culture. We had someone come on record, a politician come on record and say, women are like sugar cubes. If it's a broken piece of sugar cube, sure enough, you'll attract ants. We still see this constant peddling of narrative that if a woman dressed better, if she covered herself up more, if she wasn't out on the streets, you can avoid being sexually abused. There's this obsession with wanting to know just what she did before the act of abuse that may have warranted her being abused. And, you know, so that extremely is a very bothersome narrative. And then people wonder, why is underreporting a problem? Of course it's a problem. If a woman is at a temple, she feels afraid to speak up. Why would she feel, you know, the confidence to speak up at a music festival? Hence, we reach out to festivals directly and ensure that, you know, we put out messaging out there that there's zero tolerance for any kind of misbehavior against women, and that should something happen, they will take cognizance of it.
What are the biggest challenges She Says faces?
So for us, our biggest battle is a couple of things. One is trying to fight culture and tradition that's so deeply rooted, where it's normalized. The kind of discrimination that women face, the kind of abuse that women face has been normalized over years. So trying to break that and say, you know what, it's not okay. This is pure discrimination on grounds of gender alone has been a huge battle for us. And also using the guise of religion to discriminate against women is something that's not okay. And that's something that we're facing a lot of opposition for. The second battle most definitely is trying to bring sexual education, a comprehensive sexual education in schools and colleges. Because we come back to consent and we come back to our minister saying that criminalization of marital rape cannot happen in India because women don't understand consent. And we need to have sex education in schools and colleges because it all starts with conversation. We need heightened bystander intervention. But all of that can come into play only if you educate young people on what is appropriate behavior, what is inappropriate behavior, how can they take action. Because I tell you, every single time I visit a school and college, every single time my team visits a school and college, at the end of our 45-minute session, we have on an average at least 5 young people come up to us and share stories of being sexually abused as children. And that is just not okay. So it is a pandemic that does not get reported.
Mm-hmm. What role did the youth have in confronting these challenges?
Every time we have adults come up to us and ask for help, should they be sexually abused, it's more often than not to say, look, this happened, I need retribution, I want justice, which is completely fair. But every time I have young people come up to me and want to report it, it comes from a different place. It comes from a place of saying, for so long I kept quiet because my parents or my family members or my friends told me to. But now I realize that the perpetrator is in contact with other kids and could be abusing other kids. So I want to speak up now.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. And you can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.